Good afternoon, good evening, good morning, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of The Money Seat, the show where I, the host, put myself in the hot seat by bringing on various guests to ask me five questions related to money, finance, the market, the economy, anything really related to something a certified financial planner like myself would be able to help with. And I'm very excited for today's guest, Will. And before we get into the questions, I'd love if you could introduce yourself a little bit to the audience, Will.
Yeah, for sure. So my name is Will Heller. I'm a senior at Santa Clara University studying finance and art history. So I'm 21 years old. I was actually born in Connecticut and then grew up and spent most of my life in Issaquah, Washington, which is right outside of Seattle. Now I'm back down in Santa Clara. As far as like hobbies and interests go, I'm super passionate about cars, been playing a lot of video games lately, sports and investing.
Nice. So how old are you again, Will?
21.
Okay. And I know we were talking a little bit before that, so I hear you're graduating soon. Is that correct?
I am. Yeah. I had the opportunity to graduate this quarter, so actually in March, and I ultimately decided that finishing up early was better than doing more Zoom classes. So yes, I'll be finishing up.
Yeah, I would say that if this wasn't COVID, you probably would take the extended few months and continue. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah,
I completely get it as well. And so what, you say you're a double major in finance and art, which is very contrasting subject matter. So I'm curious what drew you to each of them and what you're going to pursue after school.
Yeah, definitely. So it was actually in high school that I first started like being really interested in history as a subject. And so I knew that I wanted to pursue it in some capacity. But then as soon as I entered college, kind of the lore of business and all that kind of stuff really took hold. And so I sort of put it on the back burner for my first year.
Okay.
However, there were a couple of classes I was pre-enrolled in that were actually art history sort of randomly. And so I basically was already like a third of the way done with the minor. And then I was basically just like, what if I keep doing this? Because it was cool. It was interesting. And so I wanted to keep doing that. So finance was kind of the assumed major that I wanted to do. Art history was kind of the passion. And I had time for both. So that's what I wanted to do. As far as what I'm going to be pursuing in the short term, it's definitely the finance role.
Okay.
But as I've sort of talked and explored, maybe art acquisition down the road. Who really knows?
Interesting.
That would be super cool.
Yeah. I think it's good that you brought that up because I came from a liberal arts background, which we don't choose a major for a few years. And I had a major, but I studied a lot of different subjects and topics. And I thought it was really valuable. And I think you do that. It sounds like you would recommend to people to try to pursue not just something that you want to do as a career, and maybe if it's a passion, that's fine, but also pursue something that maybe you can only do in college. Because I know a lot of people really focus on one thing, and I think they miss out on experiencing other things in college, other majors, other topics, other subjects. I think that's great that you're like, I want to do finance, but I have this passion for art, and let's do it both. And I think that's great. I would recommend that, and I'm sure you would to anyone else younger who's looking to go to school and not sure what they want to do. You know, just do it both and then figure it out afterwards. So I think that's great.
Yeah, that's exactly my thought process. My whole like philosophy with a lot of my classes is like, you're not going to have this opportunity to learn from experts in their subject. And so having any sort of excuse to take all these random classes from people who've dedicated their entire professional academic lives to a topic is a really unique opportunity that you won't get. So even if it is just to fulfill a credit, try to make it worthwhile for yourself and like actually engage with the topic itself.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that very much. Well, anyways, thank you for giving us a little bit about yourself. And let's transition now. I know you have some questions prepared. So especially from someone just graduating, I'm curious to see what these are because you're in a little different life phase than some of the other guests. So I'm excited to see what you have. So let's start with question number one then.
Sweet. So my first question, it's actually more of your thoughts on a current event of sorts. So as you may have been seeing in the market, GameStop, AMC, and a lot of other these stocks seem to have been propped up by a lot of hype and social media forums without any real like catalysts or fundamentals to support it. And while it first started as maybe like an exciting thing happening, they're now holding like congressional hearings on
it. Right.
I was just curious if you can maybe shed some light on just the scenario and situation itself, but then also what it may mean for more retail or individual investors compared to like hedge funds and Wall Street and stuff like that. Because, yeah, there seems to be a very interesting narrative developing. So I just wanted to hear your thoughts.
Yeah. So, and that's a good question. I've had a few people ask me some different questions about that, but yours is definitely a little bit different. And I think it's good to kind of focus on what's going on. And I'd like everyone to know that if you break everything down in a like a very micro level, it looks like individual investors are driving these prices up in some of the markets, and they're having a lot of effect, which they are, right? They had a huge effect on GameStop. However, if you look at it now, AMC, some of these, I think gold and silver, they had their like ups and downs, even Tesla. But those are just a few stocks. The market is a lot bigger than that, a lot broader than that. So while they have had a huge effect on some of those stocks, unfortunately, the little guy, the individual investor, the people who are doing this, who are going on Reddit and sitting on their toilet, right, and clicking buttons on Robinhood, they haven't and they never will have a huge impact on the global market on a larger scale. And that's just how it is going to be. That's how it's been in the past. And that's, unfortunately, that's just what it is. The hedge funds, right, the huge fund families are always going to be controlling those markets because they have the money. So while it looked like they were trying to bring the little guy down, which I actually didn't agree with that because I don't like people throwing stuff into a market and doing regulations. I think it disrupts it and it's not good. It's not like anything was changed. They still were the little guys getting squished before this, and they still don't have that much power before. I think it's good, though, that the perception – sorry, not good. I think it was bad that people started to realize how little – they mattered and how little they moved, and making those laws and putting restrictions and stuff on some of those stocks, I did not agree with. I think, once again, tinkering with the market and the economy is never something I agree with. I think, for the most part, these things need to be free-flowing and free access and work itself out, because they're really efficient over the long run if you just let it go. And the perception of that was really terrible. You can't have people distrust it. You can't have people feel like it's rigged, especially for the everyday person. So that stuff bothered me a little bit. To be honest, for like me and my profession, it didn't affect me. But there's a lot of little guys out there, and they need to feel that they put money in to the market. It's not being controlled or manipulated by some corporation telling them when they will buy a stock. Personally, if a bunch of people want to go and buy a thing of GameStop and do that, they should be allowed to. Don't short squeeze a stock. You know, that's the danger of it. I think there needs to be consequences for these big companies doing that, because one, I don't like short squeezing things. This is a personal philosophy, not a right or wrong. I think it takes a negative tone. I think you're betting on losing, and I'm a more optimistic person, and I don't think that's good. And two, it's a little manipulative because they're using a lot of money and they're using power to short squeeze stuff. And, you know, the little guy fighting back kind of makes me happy. So, you know, I just think that a lot of these big hedge fund companies throw a little too much caution to the wind and put too much money in these short squeezes. And there should be consequences, because a lot of them have a lot higher loss potential than gains when you short something, because the stock could theoretically, right, go to infinity and you could lose everything. And I think they're a little cavalier, and I hope this helps reel them in to be a little bit more cautious about this stuff. So personally, it is crazy, and I'm glad you brought up that question. I'm hoping that over the long run, people have learned something and they've adjusted. I'm curious, were you involved in this? Did you do any investing and do any trading on this?
I did.
You did?
Yeah, I got in. Yeah, so I had, like, you know, since I'm graduating, I'm like, what am I going to do with that time? I'm like, I don't know, maybe getting into like investing more actively should be interesting. It's so I was doing all this, I was just sort of reading and poking around, and I'm like, what if I put like $20
okay
into GameStop?
Right.
See what happens.
Perfect.
Like, that's when it was like the share price was like $40 a share, and then I see it just shoot up, and it was like just baffling to me. And I'm like, I don't understand this. And I'm like happy, but it like, it's the same reason why like cryptocurrency and stuff like that sort of like scares me, because I'm like, I don't understand why it's going up. Like,
the thing
about stocks is that at least some reliable logic to why things happen, and when that logic is gone, it's hard for me to like justify what's happening. And so that's why I was so sort of like rattled. I mean, again, it worked out for me, but I was sort of like, I don't understand this, and I don't think it's something that's reliable or you could really replicate. And so that's why I was curious to see
what does it mean kind of thing. And you're right. It is hard to understand. It's very even harder to replicate. And you had the perfect strategy, which I would recommend to people all over who are doing this. If you're afraid or don't understand it, please don't put a lot of money into it, okay?
Yeah.
It's not a good idea because your uncle said, I have a Bitcoin. And you go and say, oh, Bitcoin, let's do that. And you don't understand it or don't understand the risks about it and the volatility, then please don't put – $20 is fine. That's not what I'm saying. But you need to understand if you're not comfortable – putting any the certain amount of money in that you could lose all of it, then that means you're putting in too much, right? So if you put in $100 and you don't care if you lose it all, that's fine. If you had put in $1,000 and lost it all and you wouldn't be okay, then please don't do that. So you actually did a pretty good job. A lot of people don't. Some people get addicted too because they're like, they still think it's a game because it's on their phone and mm-hmm. they're not realizing that this is real money and it becomes, it really blends and morphs more into gambling than it does into investing. And that's always a recipe for disaster. You're going to lose, the house wins when that blurs the line. So please know what you're doing. Please do some research. Please be a little bit smarter. If you're not comfortable, talk to me, talk to a professional, not just your uncle or your neighbor. Okay. But I'm glad you did that. And that's a good story to hear because there were a lot of whales out there who bought when it was $300 or $400 a share and put probably too much money in and you mm-hmm. know it's worth $50 now and lost more than they're comfortable with. And unfortunately that's a lesson that a lot of people learn when they're amateurs doing this. So yeah, that's good. If you don't know what you're doing or don't understand it, don't please don't do it. So that's the takeaway from question one. I'm glad you brought that up. So good. That's a good segue. So let's do question number two.
Yeah, so question number two actually kind of works off of this topic, and it's just what are your thoughts on these micro-investing apps? You know, like Acorns, Stash, Robinhood, stuff like this seems to have taken a really big role recently, especially with young investors because there's no commission. Sign up when you're 18. You could do fractional shares, you know, no minimums. But as you've sort of said, it seems to gamify the whole process of the stock market. And so do you see that as a good entryway for a lot of people that maybe wouldn't have access to the stock market before? Or do you see it as sort of problematic or unsustainable as a business model because it's sort of working in something that's super complicated or maybe unattainable?
Yeah, so that's also a good question. And I definitely see that as the way of the future, to be honest. You know, my job used to be in the early 90s, let's say 80s and before, it would be to find a list of people to call them on the phone to say, I have a good stock or mutual fund to recommend, to then sell them on that stock or mutual fund, and they would write me a check to do that. That people haven't done that for 20 or 30 years, and people are never going to go back to doing that, right? So that type of knowledge and information is really not important for the vast majority of people. There's plenty of people who don't have any knowledge and don't care about this stuff and do want to just call me and get some recommendations. But it's good to have the regular people who want to take a more active approach and have more accessibility in these things. I think a few consequences that'll happen is there'll be more weird stuff, right? Because I think more people who just can have a click of the button on all those little small trading stocks, and I use Robinhood just as an example, but there's lots of other ones like that, they're going to start pouring more money into stuff that they don't know, which means that things that might not have the fundamentals behind them might have more ups and downs, and things are just might seem a little bit weirder. But in the market, if it's not manipulated and it's left to free flowing over the long run, it all really works itself out. So I think it's just good. I think it allows more people to have access to investing. I think it's very important for people to know that there's a lot more to everything than just that. For instance, well, how much should I be putting on those apps? And how much should I be putting in my 401k? And what should I be diversifying in my 401k if I'm doing this on the side? And should I be also putting money towards, you know, a different type of account or Roth IRA or regular IRA? And how should all this money be going, and if I get a rate, right? So there's a few, a lot of more intricacies in this that I think people can be dangerous if they just kind of keep throwing money on these and don't understand that it's not just about growing your money, but it's about growing it the right way. There's tax consequences too. People don't realize that if you put $1,000 in GameStop and got lucky and sold it at the right time and made 50 grand, that's 50 grand. That's short-term capital gains, which is just income. So you're gonna have to pay taxes on $49,000. So there's a lot of things that people aren't prepared for on both the positive and negative side that I think you need to understand that it's good to have this, but it doesn't substitute someone like me or having bigger picture planning, because there's a lot more that goes to retirement in your life and your portfolio than just picking stocks and earning money. So I hope people, once again, don't just think like they go on a YouTube channel and they think they could all of a sudden fix their car. There's just always a lot of intricacies to these things as well. So it's good for the right person. You just have to know that it's only part of the puzzle. And I think it's going to be exciting going forward that the average person has access to this, because I think it's a positive. To basically answer your question, I'm excited. I think it's good. I don't think it replaces me. I think it might replace people like me who aren't providing enough advice and value in their jobs, and that's good. You should always be replacing things that are inefficient with things that are more efficient. They don't have to tell you, you're a younger guy. That's what we're trying to do in life. So that's good. Yeah. Just, I think it's important for people to really not do it blindly, like I had said before. Just be cautious and make sure you're still knowing what you're doing. But yeah, I'm excited. And the future's only going to be crazier. I hope everything's properly regulated, and then, you know, there's the limits. You know, I hope these apps don't allow someone to put their whole life savings in on a stock and lose it all and they're done. I would hope there's a limit or something like that. But I haven't researched it enough, because I invest on my own with, you know, my own platform, on my own firm. But I do know that there is some dangers to that. Hopefully that helps answer your question.
Yeah, it does. I mean, I guess this is sort of a tangential question. I thought of something related to it is, do you think that these companies have an ethical responsibility to control what the users do on the platform?
Yes.
You know, as you said, there's sort of the free market, but then again, if they're acting as sort of the intermediary, do you think that they should be?
Yes. Yeah, they do. And that's my worry, is that they're not going to, because these people aren't financial advisors. I think a lot of them are more engineers, more people who are doing the technical side of stuff, or business people. If I were to do this app, I think a way to help prevent people from being their worst enemy is that you need to put in your income. You should probably put in an approximate value of your assets, your mortgage, you know, some of these things in there, and run a quick algorithm so the system can do a check to being like, you've invested too much based on, these are all percentages and numbers and statistics that you could run in based on someone's personal information. I don't think someone should just be able to open up the app and just start buying stuff and throwing whatever they want, because someone's going to lose all their money. Then someone's going to get sued, because that's what happens in America, because no one takes any blame for their own actions, right? It's always someone else's fault.
Right.
And then they're going to make ridiculous laws because one idiot person didn't understand what they were doing. And then they're going to change the stuff forever. And instead of doing that, it's very simple. Once again, you start the app, you make sure someone puts in income, age, you know, debts, mortgage liabilities, expense payments, what they currently have in other assets and stuff. And then they could just run a little algorithm saying, you know, blah, 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 should not be putting more than, you know, this amount in there. And then you cap someone at a certain amount a day or a certain amount of investments total to prevent them from being their own worst enemy. People might not like that, but if you're working with professionals like myself who know that, I think you can develop that and help prevent it from getting too out of control. But I don't know if someone's going to do that. I don't know how much work that is, because I don't know how to make apps and do all this stuff. But for me, that's how I would do it, because, otherwise, just like someone going to a casino who has a problem, it's the same thing. They're going to get addicted. People are going to get addicted to trading on these apps, just like they get addicted to pressing buttons and playing craps and playing blackjack and betting on sports. It's the same thing. And when that happens, there's always someone who can't control their spending habits, and that worries me. So hopefully they figure it out, because like you said, this stuff is new, and how this is all happening is still in its infancy, and it's going to evolve and move quickly. And hopefully there's some ways to prevent that from happening. So hopefully that was good. So that was that question three, or was that question two B?
That was 2B.
Okay. All right. So let's move on to question 3 then.
Cool. Yeah, that sounds good. All right. So, you know, obviously, since I'm going to be graduating, I'm about to have the wonderful thing of student loans.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, shifting gears here to something that's maybe less fun or interesting. But basically, my question is very broad. It's what's the best way or best approach to paying them off? Because I've sort of thought of a few different things.
Uh-huh.
I feel like there's sort of like you pay off as much of the principal as possible to reduce your interest payments sort of over time. Or there's, you know, you can invest enough that somehow your return annually could cover, like the peer prop you make can then cover the interest. But then again, that's sort of a riskier approach. Or there's, I guess, three other, which is maybe for you to sort of fill in the blanks. So just sort of your thoughts generally on those different approaches and
ideas. So this depends on a few factors. One is the amount of the student loans, and I'll throw the interest rate in there. Right. So if you're trying to take the statistical approach and you think your money is going to grow at a higher rate than you're paying interest, right, you could run those numbers as well. But the amount is a big factor, to be honest. And everyone's different, so it's hard to say. But there's a lot of stuff that goes into that that doesn't have anything to do with finance or numbers. It's on the psychological and the mental side of things. So even if you might earn a percentage or two more in the market of investing than you would be by paying it off, and yeah, it'd be nice to grow some wealth if you're younger, there's something about, for a lot of people, paying off their student loans and mentally getting that done that is priceless. It's invaluable. So those are things that you need to figure out, and those are the things I work with people on, because a lot of this stuff is about you and how you personally feel about this. Some people don't care that they look at a statement and it says the $50,000. And some people eat them away every single day of their life and they're never going to feel free until they get them out. So for me, I don't care if you're going to make 20% of the market. They're going to need to pay off those student loans so they can move on with their life. And right, and that's the most important thing, that mental health is always more important than money. I tell people money is very important, but your mental health and your physical health are more important than that. And if this is gonna weigh you down, you need to focus on that. Because once again, you're gonna get older, then you're gonna have kids, and you might have get married and have kids and wanna buy a house. And if you still are lingering those student loan debts, that stuff kinda slowly carries with you, and it becomes harder and harder and harder to pay off in the future when your life becomes more complicated, which is just how life works. So I do encourage people who are younger, who don't maybe have $50,000 or less, aggressively pay off those loans and then focus on the growing assets and stuff later in life. Especially if they have a 401k at work and they could throw money in there and it's getting matched, they're already having some money going to investments in a portfolio and growing for retirement. You know, if they don't have that and there's nothing, you know, we could always balance it out based on a budget, but it's really different for every person. And that's why it's very important to figure out what's you, right? How do you work? How do you operate? And that's why it's part of my job feels like it's part like psychiatrist / therapist / like life coach, because that does go into it. What I'm going to recommend you, Will, is going to be different than another person in your same age demographics, who lives where you do, who makes the same amount of money and who has the same amount of debt. But their advice might be very different than yours, even though all the numbers and algorithms and statistics say are the same. And there might be millions of those people who fit all those things. But they're going to be doing this very differently. And it's just based on those things I said. Human emotion and human feelings really drive a lot of this stuff and a lot of the advice we do. And that's why it's important. That's really, a lot of my stuff helps, because it's hard to figure that out on your own, to be honest. It is. You know, we all have troubles with that. I mean, I'm usually too close to figuring, you know, I need to like take a step back and maybe talk to other people about when it comes to my life. And most people do with their own stuff as well. So that would be my advice on that. It depends, right? It depends on you and what you want to do and what you're looking to do and your goals. And well, you know, life's complicated, man. That's my best thing. And so you got to figure all those things out. But I would say take some time to figure those things out. Some people do it on their own and some people work with me to help them out, hold them accountable. Part of my job is to say, hey, did you do it? You know, what did you come up with? And making sure a lot of people don't end up doing that and they just throw money at things and hope it works. And it's not the most efficient thing to do. And then once again, you have kids, you get married, you life becomes complicated, and then you really don't have the time to do that, to be honest. So I like to tell people, while you have the time, let's get up a plan and let's be aggressive for what you want, whether those goals are student loans or both or something like that.
Right. That makes sense. Yeah. So I kind of have, I guess, like a 3B.
Okay. Again, sounds good. Building off of
that a little bit. And so yeah. Something that I've, like, you know, sort of heard about is that bringing emotions into finance, I guess this is primarily focused on investing, but just in general,
yeah,
problematic. It cloud your judgment on many, yes, things that are statistical decisions. Do you agree with that sentiment? Or do you think, as you said, you need to sort of account for the reality of the psychological element that definitely informs these decisions?
Yes. So there's two parts of that. So I agree that people make bad decisions about their money when emotions are involved at the time. So people get emotional about their money. And this is why, and I've said this before in the podcast, the average rate of return on the S&P 500 is 8%. And the average rate of return of the average investor is between 2 and 3. It's because they get euphoric when the market goes up and they start putting money in when they see it on the news. And then when the market goes down and hits a bottom of the year or the month, they get really sad and they start selling. And that's exactly the opposite of what you want to do. People get very emotional about their money. So my job is to prevent you from making those in the moment emotional mistakes about your money, about buying and selling and keeping the money in, and just understanding that I'm handling that. I'm doing this for everyone. We're keeping that emotion out of it. But then the other part of it is, I wouldn't necessarily say the emotions, but your thoughts, your feelings, your comfortability with the market and taking risk should guide how you invest, if that makes sense. So there's your emotions should guide the bigger picture, and then you then should not let your emotions irrationally make you do things that don't align to your bigger picture. And if that sounds a little complicated, I can tell people that we all have a bigger plan. We all have a regular emotional state in life for everything. And then there's a time where we get upset, we get panicked, whatever it is with life, with relationships, with the gym, with whatever, with food, right? We do things that are counter to what our bigger picture emotions are based on how we get, you know, irrationally at the time. So that's hopefully helps you answer that question. It is very important, and they're all tied together. And once again, it's very hard for people to do that on their own, to realize, okay, the market's down, this sucks, I've lost 50% of my portfolio because 2008 happened, but my money doesn't have to come out for a while. There's nothing fundamentally wrong with Apple or Amazon or Google or any of these companies. So does selling these make sense right now based on my bigger picture of financial goals and stuff? Almost no one does that, right? They're just like, oh, God, I lost money. I can't lose anymore, right? Or, oh, my God, the market's at a high. I missed out. I got to get in. And so those are usually what drives people, like I said, to the 2 or 3%. So my job is to say, well, what are your big picture emotions, right? And then work in the fact to make sure that you don't become your own worst enemy, because a lot of people do that. A lot of people got killed in 2008 because – once again, it's true. It's for a lot of people, whether it's $100,000 or $10 million, if that's your whole life's net worth, it's gonna mean the same to you. It doesn't matter about the value. If you earn $50,000, you're gonna react the same as someone who has $5 million. It's really the same. It doesn't matter about the dollar. So,
right,
man, it's really that. And if you're someone like that, and most people are, you really shouldn't be managing it on yourself, or you should at least have, yeah, someone who's going to be a life coach who, before you pull the trigger, you can call and talk to and say, should I be worried? And then you have someone to talk through. Really, once again, a therapist, someone to talk you through some of these things to help you out. And we all need that. I mean, it's crazy in all of our lives, right? Not just finances. It's this stuff applies to everything. And finances aren't special. They're not different than how you approach the rest of your life, your relationships. Yeah, going to the gym, you know, all that other stuff, your health, it really needs to be thought of in the same way. And I'm a big believer in that, and that it drives a lot of things. And while statistics and fundamentals and analysis are important, it doesn't matter if you're an emotional person and you're going to sometimes hurt yourself and act in your own worst enemy when things, yeah, get a little rocky. So hopefully that helped. That was 3B?
That was 3B.
Okay, yep. Perfect. So let's move on to 4 then.
Sweet. So, again, another question that's maybe not as exciting, but I'm definitely curious about, okay, is basically, how do you suggest, essentially, just navigating budgeting and managing expenses as a new professional? Because I've never really had a,
yeah,
like, regular income or regular expenses like I will be having in, I don't know, a few short months. So, is there any sort of strategies to be more kind of, I guess, systematic with, like, the approach to money and managing it on, like, a day-to-day basis in a sense?
Yes, and I'm glad you brought that up, and I'm going to give a quick shameless promotion to me and what I'm doing for services. So I've realized that you and millions of people like you are out there who, and myself included, where you spent your whole life being supported by your parents, or, you know, just like money wasn't, you weren't making money and it wasn't part of your daily life. And then all of a sudden you have a job, you're making money, and it's like, oh, well, okay, now what, right? And what should you be doing? And there's millions of people out there like that. And none of them have had in the past, and even now, have had the advantage or the opportunities to work with professional advisors or people on this, for the most part, because they don't have investable assets. To that barrier of entry has always been there for them to work with. So I have decided to change how I work with people to do more of a subscription model to help people exactly like you who need help with budgeting and cash flow and being held accountable. And then you spent, you know, $50 a month is what I was thinking for those models. And then you go invest in Robin and you go invest and do all that on your own. Because you don't need me to do that if you don't want. But I help people with the bigger picture stuff on that, the debt management for their student loans, how to put this to the cash flow, what should go in the 401k, what benefits to do at work, how much they could afford for rental versus buying, saving maybe for 5 years down the road to buy something, what should be going to a Roth IRA, what those are, all that stuff. So those are all things we work through. We talk about, like I said, a financial life coach. Also to get more people to be a guest on the show, I'm offering everyone 1 free year of doing that as well. So those listening, if you are a guest on the show, you get 1 free year of that. Because it's not easy. Because what you need to do is you have to spend time to do it. And not everyone wants to. You need to figure out what's coming in let's stay at the beginning of the year you do it, but you're getting a job. So as soon as you get that, you need to figure out what's my income, okay? What am I going to be spending in terms of rent, in terms of utilities, in terms of stuff that if I lost my job, I still have to spend this money. Otherwise, they're turning off the power or the water or I'm getting evicted, right? So, you know, going out to dinner once a week or having money for bars and friends does not go in that budget. That's the variable side. So you have to have a fixed expense and a variable expense. You budget all that out. You do a cash flow. You use certain percentages. And this is stuff that I kind of could get into a little bit more offline for you or with anyone else because it gets technical. And then we go into, okay, what's income, what's expenses, what's left over, what do you want to spend on gifts or charities or friends or going out or fun stuff? What do you want to spend on paying down debts? It could be credit card, it could be student loans, it could be cars, whatever you have. And then what do you want to make sure goes into a 401k, into a Roth IRA, into an individual? What's left? How much should go into each one? And what should I do with the bonus that I get at the end of the year? What do I need to get for? So all these things are things that we work on to get you set up and then evaluate it every year. Usually at the end of the year, you get a little raise or you have a wedding or things happen every year that affect you financially. Usually it's every 2 years that you need to reevaluate this plan because that's why it's an ongoing service that I tell people usually work with the rest of your life because in your 20s, things are changing like crazy. You know, when a few years go by and you might want to get a new job or you might meet someone and you might be getting married or you might have a baby, right? Or you might have you might want to buy a house in a few years and then you might need to get life insurance, right? And all these things happen and it just becomes a big thing. And so there's too many variables for one person to plan. So you need to account for all those variables, whether it's you doing it yourself or working with a professional, but you have to do it. Once again, you need to set up some spreadsheets. You need to make sure you have all this tracked. You don't have to do it every day or every month, but you should do it at the beginning of the year and you should evaluate it at the end of the year and anytime a big life event change happens. Once again, a job, wedding, it could be negative, it could be a death, it could be a disability. Once again, people forget to plan the negatives, unfortunately, in life and the positives as well. And part of my job is to make sure there's no surprises, there's nothing that you can't handle and that everything is coming in efficiently and afford, and you could afford it. So if anything crazy comes up, you're prepared to handle it. And 90% of people, I don't know, I think the statistics are around 80 to 90% of the people don't have enough cash flow on hand to withstand any type of like unexpected event, which is usually health or anything. But part of it is also building up cash in the bank, right? There's just a lot of stuff. I could go on and on, but but there's a lot. And it's a little overwhelming. And if you're 22 years old and graduating college, you don't really, most people don't want to do that. You seem like who you might enjoy that things, but most people are not like you. They don't want to think about that at all. And so that's really where I've targeted people to be like, Ross, $50 a month. You're like my financial, you know, I could go on YouTube and watch workout videos, but I'd rather just pay for a personal trainer to get me in shape because that's better for me and my personality.
Yep.
So that's where I've kind of positioned it to do. And then I set you up for all that and you could live your life and be happy and know that Ross has got things covered on that side and you're good. And I was talking to your mom and she liked the idea and she thought that that makes a lot of sense, especially for me being younger, I could relate more. And that's why there's just different advisors to do different things like that. Whether you once again invest with me or whoever else you want, you still need all that advice. And I think that's important to let people know. You have to do that. Even if you're making minimum wage out of college, it's still income coming in. You still have expenses. You still have debts. You still probably have a 401k at work. You have to get all that figured out. Because, man, I can't tell you how many people I've seen who are in their 50s or 60s and they never figured this out. And then they come to me for help and it's too late. Just being honest, it's too late. Life is too complicated. So do it now. Take advantage of being young, man. Time is so precious. And don't, you know, once again, if you don't want to do it yourself, that's fine. You know, that's where we're here to help. So hopefully that helps with you. Once again, those are all things that you'd have a conversation outside where we'd get into the nitty gritty. But like I said, those are some of the things you have to plan and think about and look at and evaluate. It's hard work. I tell people this isn't easy. People spend more time planning their trip to Disneyland than they do on the stuff I just described, which is crazy. You know, you might need 5 or 10 hours. That's how much I spend probably doing it for you. And it's might suck and it might be hard and but it's so worth it. It's so necessary. You have to plan this stuff out. And a lot of times I think people just avoid it because they don't know what they're doing. They don't know the right person to help them. It's not their strong suit, right? A lot of that stuff. I get it. But if you avoid it, it doesn't make the problem go away. Just like anything else in life. I like to compare it. Yeah. So that's kind of it. And that's really why I wanted to bring you on and other people. Because I know there's millions of Will out there who are smart. They graduated school. They have great degrees. They worked hard. They have jobs. And I want to make sure that they're set up for success. Because the system doesn't necessarily set you up for success just based on your degrees. You have to do some more stuff. You have to plan the finances. The government doesn't care about you financially. They're not going to take care of you. And if it doesn't work out, they really don't care. Your parents might, your friends might, but are they going to be able to help you? So it's on that. Hopefully,
that's totally what I've noticed myself. Yeah. Like even last summer, my internship, they're like, "Hey, we'll match your 401k up to like whatever percent." Uh-huh. And I'm like, I don't know what that means.
So
like you get thrown into these like real life
adult
decisions without any education, without any knowledge, and it's like, "Hey, you better do it now because you're missing out." And it just like so. Yeah, I definitely see the value and the necessity of everything that you're describing.
Yeah,
because and like even in the short term, there's no one that really like helps you
unless
you get out yourself.
I made the same mistakes too. When I graduated, I got an MBA. I went straight from undergrad to grad. I got an MBA and I was 23. And I was much more educated in that space than the average person. Mm-hmm. And I didn't do any of it right. I didn't build up a cash reserves. I was living at $1,000 a month in my checking account. That's it. I was spending money. I was la-da-da-dying it. I wasn't taking advantage of the 401k. And I was way more knowledgeable than the average person. I wasted 5 years until I got to this profession. I wasted 5 years of what I could have done of building up wealth and growing my money. Now, mm-hmm. luckily, you know, you could always catch up if you're younger. But right. I'd rather not people waste those 5 years or 10 for a lot of people, right? Let's do that. Let's take advantage of being young when you have less life commitments. Because you're right, even the smartest people, even the people who really understand life and have good jobs and stuff, this is just, it's a foreign concept. They don't teach this in school, which is a shame. And that's a whole other conversation. But no one learns this in school. It's stuff you learn out in the real world always the hard way. And the problem is the hard way is wasting time in life. So let's not do that anymore, right? Let's get everything set up. I want to set up a whole generation of 20-year-olds and teenagers and even people younger than that, so they come out of college ready to know what they're doing financially, and they can retire when they're 40 or 50 because we killed it. Man, that would be awesome if I could set up a whole generation of people who retire in their 50s. Man, that would be great. It would be awesome. And then it would free up a whole new jobs, a bunch of jobs for younger people to come and take.
Right? I know. Right? It's a self-sustaining process.
That, like exactly. That. And then the government doesn't have to rely on you, and you could give your Social Security check to charity or whatever, right? I'm trying to do good things here. But yes, you're exactly right. And once again, I can't help the millions of people. That's too many clients. But, you know, the point is that it's very important. It's one of the most important things you can do when you graduate is get some financial literacy done, because, man, you're on your own. People don't discuss this in their families too. So it's not like you learn this stuff growing up. It's not like mom and dad or mom and mom or dad and dad or whatever. We're talking at the dinner table about make sure to maximize your 401k, right? It's kind of like, I said this on another podcast, it's kind of like the sexual conversation with your family. It's not discussed. Therefore, you have to figure it out on your own, which is scary and right. And I'm sure people make mistakes on that end. And it's the same thing here. So let's not do that. So I'll kind of end it, that fourth question on that. But I can't stress how important it is to set up a plan and do stuff, because yeah, I want to give you the time. I want to make sure that you can do what you want and retire and be happy in your 50s and not get stuck working a crappy job that you want to retire because you didn't save enough when you were younger.
Yeah, that makes...
That was four? Was that four?
That was
okay, four, yep. So let's do question five. Five and the last one.
Yep, so five is, in all honesty, kind of counterintuitive to all the smart things that we've been talking about so far, and it's that, you know, I have a higher appetite for risk, and all this FOMO that's been happening in the market, so any sort of semi-sustainable way of going into these more speculative investments with any sort of, you know, sound logic or reason to try to hop on these crazy waves of, you know, hundreds of percent happening in 3 months, or is it really just a gamble when it
comes to it? That stuff, it's not... You're talking a little bit more about, it's not a get rich quick scheme, but I compare it to that. You want to put money in and make a bunch right away. And listen, I do too, and so does everyone, but that's trading, that's gambling, that's not investing. For the most part, some people might have such an extensive knowledge of some limited thing that they could do it with skill, but I'm going to throw those people out there. They're outliers. That stuff, once again, it would be great if we could have a crystal ball and see stuff, but we can't. And at this point, for a lot of that stuff, it's more of a hope and a guess than there is met with fundamental stuff. So once again, if you want to do that with $100, with $500, with money that's disposable to you, that if you lose, it's fine, then take the hope and the prayer. Take the lottery ticket, understanding the downside of that is most likely you're going to lose it all or it's going to earn nothing. Okay, but there's nothing really crazy fundamental about that stuff that you're going to be able to find an edge on anyone else that you think, okay, I read this article and now it's going to be, you know, blah, blah, blah. They're going to be the next GameStop and Reddit. I'm sorry. It's all a guess. So I would tell people to be very cautious. People might say this and they're wrong. You can't outsmart the market. You cannot. You could do it once. You could get lucky. You could do it maybe over short term, but over the long period of time, over larger quantity and variable size and larger sample size, you're not going to outsmart the market. No one can do that. If they say that, they're lying. Sorry, you can't. The market's smarter than everyone, even me. If it wasn't, then I wouldn't need to do this podcast. I would just go buy all the stocks that are going to grow 1,000% the next year and make all the money, and I could retire tomorrow, right? But I can't, and most people can't either. So unfortunately, that brings me whole back to the fact that it's a long, hard, arduous road to growing wealth for most people. People who have millions of dollars spent 30 years saving and investing and growing and being patient. It's an unfortunate reality. Now, there is other things you can do. You know, maybe you do want to take, you know, you have $1,000 to spend, and maybe you want to take $900 and do long-term investing that's stable, and maybe you want to take $50 or $100 and throw it into something that's crazy. Maybe there's some art that you think could blow up in value or something that you think could be the next big thing. That's fine. Take the 3 to 5% of your of your investable income, not your total income, that's too much, but of what your investable portfolio could be, and throw it into something speculative, throw it into something that you want to think could hit big, because if you lose it, right, that's only 3 or 5% of your portfolio value. So that should help answer that percentage. There's nothing wrong with that, but please don't take it all, because you're probably going to lose it all. It's not the best idea, and I don't have any specific recommendations. I know people have gotten into art. There's ways to invest in wine, and there's ways to do commodities and short squeeze and options and all that stuff. But please make sure you're doing that with caution, with 3 or 5% of your portfolio, and not with everything. So no, I mean, I wish there was a get rich quick scheme, quick answer. It's not. Investing is hard work. It's for the long haul. You got to have the long-term vision hat on and understand that it's going to be painful sometimes. But in 10 or 20 years, you're going to see the fruits of the labor. Compounding interest, exponential growth. If you don't know those terms, look it up. It's a snowball effect, right? The tiny little snowball you roll down the hill becomes a giant at the bottom. And you're like, you can't comprehend quite how $1,000 could grow to 50 over 30 years or, you know, 10 or whatever. But it does. And that's how it works. It's just, that's math. But please keep that in mind. That's why I also tell people to start younger, because then if you're 20 or 22, you might see some of that really start happening when you're in your 30s and 40s, as opposed to starting in your 30s or 40s and waiting till your 50s or 60s, right? I mean, that's it. Mm-hmm. It's a big difference. Starting 5 or 10 years earlier, we only live to be 80 or 90, right? That's a huge, if you said I could retire 10 years earlier, that's, man, that's invaluable to me.
That's significant, right, yeah.
It is, but yeah, I know everyone wants the get rich quick scheme. I get it. It's easier. It's quicker. We want immediate gratification now, but that's not really part of what I do. And I don't think that's really realistic. You know, if someone you know did that, that's great. Pat them on the back. They're going to try to do it again, and they're probably going to lose it all. And they won't tell you about it, right? They're only going to tell you about their successes. They're not going to tell you about their failures. So if you're listening, thinking everyone out there made hundreds of thousands of dollars on this stuff, that's just not the reality. It's really not.
I think it's easy to like – social media, it's all this stuff. So I think getting a professional perspective is a good like cold water in the face.
Yeah.
To, like, snap me, and I'm sure a lot of others back to reality of like, yeah, that's not really possible. It's just sort of luck.
Yeah. I know. Once again, you see the 1,000% in the market. That's great. You know, to give you some perspective, my clients and a lot of portfolios in the last 6 months or a year, the market did very well. We're probably 15 or 20%, you know, over that time. That's great. 1,000% is not a realistic thing. Even what I said is not realistic. Like I said, the market over the history of its time earns about 8%. And if you're doing everything on your own and you're not being your own risk, I mean, you just threw it in the S&P 500 and didn't touch it for 20 years, you could do a quick calculator of what your money will do. It's very quickly. Go online, do a calculator, put that money in, grow it at 8%, never touch it for 20 years, and you'll know exactly what it'll be worth. That's something you could do. That's the easy part. The hard part is not touching it, is not freaking out when it lost 50%, right? And so it, once again, it all sounds easier than it is, but it really is about long-term view, keeping that long-term focus and not letting distractions like the news or media. Because remember, the news and the social media isn't designed necessarily to educate you. It's designed for you to watch and for you to listen. All right. It's designed to be entertainment, right? The guy on TV who screams up and down and presses buttons to make sound effects for you to buy stocks isn't there to educate you. He's there to sell advertising revenue and to make money. So he has a TV show. It's important. Okay. Fox News, CNBC, CNN. Once again, it is all important to help you, but the market stuff on there is designed to do the most crazy story of the day. So you watch it. Okay. It's not necessarily representative of the real story of the market, of what's going on, because it's a lot of that stuff is boring and you wouldn't tune in to watch. So I'm glad you asked that, because I think people, and that's, I think that's similar with other news stories, right? You could watch the news and feel like the world's falling, and it's just because they're showing you the craziest stories of the day, and they're usually negative. So it's just, please keep all that stuff in perspective. Okay. All that stuff is designed for viewership, not to educate you, which is unfortunate, but anyways, hopefully that helps. On that end.
That totally does.
Yeah.
It's like I see my portfolio and you see the ETFs and you're like, this is boring. And you're like, why can't I do more? But you really can't do much more. You're gonna, like, I feel like the losses and gains from the short-term stuff is just always going to just basically cancel out. you're out.
FOMO is so dangerous for investing. It's really, that's why you see the people who have the 2% returns or worse, who say the market's rigged or they never earn. Listen, the market isn't rigged. You can put your money in and earn 8%, right, like I said, over a long period of time, guaranteed.
Yeah.
But why doesn't everyone do that? And it's the FOMO, it's the emotions, it's all that stuff that come into it. And it's crazy. Like I said, a lot of my job isn't necessarily the financial analytic side of things. It's the emotional side. It's the talking people through things, which is crazy how valuable that is. Just like with a personal trainer, they might not need to know all the amazing workouts. They just need to motivate your ass to get to the gym and do it every day and hold you accountable. Yeah. That's what you're paying them to do, right?
Yeah.
They might not be... They might not know about every muscle in your body and all the – right? I don't even know all that stuff. But and they might not either, and it doesn't matter, right? If they got you here, if you're doing your workout and you're losing weight and feeling good, then they've accomplished their goal, right? Whether or not they know everything, just like – right? I mean it's like I say with that stuff. There's a reason why those jobs and those people exist, man, because people left to their own devices – FOMO, it's real. It really is. And that worries me about this Robinhood. I can't imagine how many people are online right now clicking buttons looking for the next GameStop or AMC. And they're not doing properly long-term investing. They're missing out on market returns and all this stuff. And it worries me because it's just that's not the reality of the larger market. That's just a tiny little micro section that happened for a few lucky people. Good for you.
Right.
Yeah.
Find something. Basically.
Yeah. Perfect. Was that question five?
That was number five. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Will. That was a good conversation. Some good stuff from people younger in your situation. I'm hoping everyone listening right now realizes kind of what's going on. Hopefully has a little bit more knowledge and empower to take control of their financial life as they graduate now in the next few years. Feel a little bit better about what they're doing. And if not, you know, that's what I'm here for as well. So yeah, thanks again, Will, very much for being a guest today on The Money Seat. And I'll tune in next time, everyone, for another episode of The Money Seat with your host, Ross Krause. Securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA SIPC. The opinions voiced in this podcast are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriate qualified professionals prior to making a decision. All performance referenced is historical and is no guarantee of future results. All indices are unmanaged and may not be invested into directly. Economic forecasts set forth may not develop as predicted, and there can be no guarantee that strategies promoted will be successful.